Now for our final speaker of the day, I would like to invite Felix Neubauer, Michael Cromie and Peter Van Vliet to come and speak on behalf of the Office for Disability.
Thank you very much, Melissa. It's wonderful to be here, and thanks to your organisation, Daru, for putting on such a wonderful forum. Really appreciate the opportunity to say a few words. I'm sure, add to the many people who've acknowledged the traditional owners of the land, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, the elders past and present. So it gives me great pleasure to speak to you today. My name is Peter Van Vliet. I'm the Assistant Director, Disability Inclusion at the Department of Health and Human Services. And it's really important. Oh, sorry. Don't want to leave without that. That would be problematic. It's great in the Office for Disability to be able to support the advocacy sector, to support organisations like Daru, and to assist them to perform this critically important function of advocating for people with disability and promoting their rights and participation in our society. Now, there's a lot going on in the disability sector at the moment with the rollout of the NDIS, or the National Disability Insurance Scheme, and we're doing a lot of work in the state government about ensuring that the vision of the NDIS, to ensure that both improved disability services for individuals, but also to ensure that our mainstream service systems in areas like health, mental health, housing and homelessness, children and families, that all those services are really responsive to people with disability. And we're on a bit of a journey, and we know at this point in time, it's a complex and at times difficult journey, but the state government certainly is not vacating the field, even though the federal government will become, in effect, the main provider through the NDIA of disability services. We certainly are not vacating the field. Our minister has made clear that he has very high expectations that our state services continue to provide equitable, accessible services to people with disability, and we will continue to play a role in funding the advocacy sector to perform its critical role in helping people with disability, particularly at this time when there's just so much going on as people enter the scheme as it rolls out. I'll just make a few formal comments about some of the work we're doing, if that's okay. So for the first time this year, we've rolled out an annual report in State Parliament on our state disability plan called Absolutely Everyone. I've got a copy here. So this is hot off the press. It was just released by our minister quite recently. But basically, for the first time ever, for some of the outcomes within our state disability plan, we're going to have a measurement. We're going to have an index which measures how they're travelling. For instance, under fairness and safety, and then we've got a section on how many people with disability experience discrimination. We've got a measure here that 13.5%, I suspect it's slightly higher than that, but 13.5% is the baseline, and we'll be looking for that figure to improve as we roll out many of the aspects of the state disability plan. But I encourage people to look at that. It's a new initiative, and we're very happy with it. And for the first time, we'll be actually measuring the impact of our state disability policies, which is really, really good. And that's available in accessible formats at www.statedisabilityplan.vic.gov.au. Within the Department of Health and Human Services, we're also introducing a disability action plan, which we've done an enormous amount of work on. We've worked very closely with our own staff with disability, with people with disability, and with fellow travellers on the journey to develop a draft plan. And what we're really focused on is meeting the employment participation targets that the state government and Minister Foley recently outlined as part of the new employment participation plan. And that is a really significant target of trying to get to 6% of state public sector employees with disability by 2020, and then to 12% by 2020. The current figure is too low. It's around 4%, and we really have to get that figure up very quickly, and we've committed to that. And our DHHS plan is a part of that action. I would encourage you, if you have an opportunity, to have a look at that. It's available on our website for public consultation. at dhhs.vic.gov.au at our DHHS website, and we'd be really pleased to get feedback on the plan we've done. Felix and his team and the Office for Disability have done some great work on that. We're really keen that it's as good as it can be through your input. We've also had lots of input with the Enablers Network, and we've got some representatives from the Enablers Network here, and they're a bunch of employees with disability in the public sector who are doing great work on making the Victorian public sector more accessible for people with disability. The other initiative I've got that I wanted to talk to you before I come to advocacy was an initiative around boards and committees. Again, the numbers on boards and committees for people with disability are too low. They're way too low. I think, Felix, they're around 1%, which is just not good enough. This needs to change. And so we've started a new program with working with the Disability Leadership Institute, Voice at the Table, Leadership Victoria, and our own Victorian Disability Advisory Council to get those numbers up quickly. We're going to be training staff, we're going to have a communications plan, and we're going to do everything we can to attract more people with disability onto our own boards and committees. And we're in the process of finalising that work, and we'll circulate a plan as soon as we can. So there's a lot of work going on at the Victorian Government level, aligned with but separate to the big NDIS scheme, to ensure that our own services and our own systems are much more responsive and much more accessible to people with disability. I now want to turn briefly to disability advocacy. So there's been quite a number of initiatives, as you know, under the previous state budgets around this. There's been the Disability Advocacy Sector Capacity Building Fund, and the Minister has recently notified recipients of that fund, the Disability Advocacy Sector Capacity Building Fund, and we will release a full list of these budget initiatives shortly. Initiatives will be based across Victoria, and we're also going to focus on people who might face double disadvantage, Aboriginal people, people from culturally and linguistically diverse communities, and people who identify as LGBTI who also have disability. The initiatives will also provide dedicated advocacy on important issues such as child protection and the disability support pension. A number of other initiatives will use technology to improve collaboration, measure advocacy outcomes, and provide online learning for advocates. The 2018-19, the recent state budget, will provide further additional funding in disability advocacy over 2 years, and that will be on top of the $3 million in annual recurrent funding through the Victorian Disability Advocacy Program. And we will be shortly consulting on a Disability Advocacy Futures Plan, which I know Melissa's been involved in working up some of our consultation around that, and we're very excited about that Advocacy Futures Plan. And that plan will inform how we allocate the 2018-19 state budget investment, and it will include measures to ensure we can provide advocacy more effectively now and into the future. Am I going too fast? Should I slow down? All good. People say I talk too fast. Feedback from people with disability, families and advocacy groups will help us write the Advocacy Futures Plan. And importantly, feedback will also help the Victorian Government decide which areas need additional funding and, for example, where the gaps are and the types of advocacy support people need. Consultation will be based on a discussion paper due for release from August. And you might like to start thinking about what kind of changes you think we need to make to improve advocacy in Victoria and how this additional funding should be used. So in conclusion, I just want to say it's great to be working with the advocacy sector. There's so much work to be done. We're all on a shared journey to make sure that Victoria is a very, very inclusive place for people with disability, that we can do everything we can to minimise barriers, to make sure our services are equitable, are accessible, reduce discrimination. Our Minister's absolutely committed to this, as are we and our colleagues in the Office for Disability and in the broader disability branch in the Department of Health and Human Services. And we know that it's a challenging time. We know that some people are facing complexities as we transition into the NDIS full scheme, but we're here with you all the way, and we want to do everything we can to assist you and your families and your friends and your clients in that process. So I'm here for a short time for some questions, but I do have to leave, unfortunately, for another engagement. But I'll hand over now to Michael, who's going to give us a bit of an update on the NDIS scheme. Thank you.
So I always feel like I have to start with a disclaimer as well, and that is I'm not part of the NDIS, I'm part of the Victorian government transition to the NDIS. So thanks, Peter. Just a quick update, and then I think the important bit is to give you the opportunity to ask any questions you might have. So 35,000 people are currently in receipt of services, and 11 out of 17 areas are in transition. We're behind on the transition. We're around three quarters of people that should have been into the scheme by now are in. So it's a fair bit of work to be done. I think you would be better placed to talk to me about some of the issues that you've confronted through this period of time. I can talk a bit more about what's underway in the Victorian government. Happy to do that. But I just wanted to create this space for you to be able to talk a bit about your own experiences, either family members, people, service providers, or just friends, as Peter said, of people with a disability that might be experiencing some of those difficulties. So I might just start there, and if you want to walk around, roam around with the microphone, that'd be really good. Felix is also here, and Peter's here for a little bit of time to answer any questions you might have about the scheme transition to date. If it is quiet, I'll just keep talking, and believe me, that's not ideal for anyone in the room. Yeah.
Hi, I wanted to ask you about mental illness. A lot of people are finding that they're not eligible under the NDIS that have a mental illness. And I believe funds from some mental illness programs have now been put into the NDIS. So obviously there's a gap. Are they looking at readdressing the criteria, or are they looking at funding, or...
So, I mean, Peter might be well placed to answer this as well, working in the sort of mainstream interface area. I think with all the parts of the scheme, mental illness is psychosocial disability in the scheme, it's proven to be obviously challenging for people trying to enter the scheme and trying to understand what the criteria looks like, and the experiences haven't been great for a whole range of people. From our end, what we're trying to do is influence the way the scheme is designed. So that means the Victorian government, hearing all these issues that the type of which you've just talked about, have come to our attention on in a range of ways, in a range of forums. So trying to influence the way the NDIA is designing the scheme, and there's a whole range of ways we do that, you know, through COAG, which is the Council of Australian Governments, and having our own minister representing the interests of Victorians with a disability and mental illness, psychosocial disability, in those sort of forums. Certainly one of the major issues has been the access pathway for people with psychosocial disability. So I think it is something that is firmly... And we've got a year to go within this transition, and we've got to get that that right. You know, we need to get that pathway right for a whole range of people. But again, they're probably the challenges that have been confronted by the mental health sector, because it also went through a major transition into a different commissioning model just before the start of the NDIS. That's had an impact. That really needs to continue to be put forward and advocated for through our jurisdiction to the federal government and through to the NDIA as well. I don't know whether you wanted to add anything to that.
I think Michael covered that very well. The only thing I would say is that obviously as we roll out to the end full scheme, we're identifying some challenges, and it's indisputable that the psychosocial disability cohort that there's been challenges around with that cohort, how a sort of choice and control insurance model works when you don't have assertive outreach and you're not going out and getting people into the scheme. So we're having those discussions with the NDIA and with the Commonwealth Government about how the NDIA gets better at that, and I think they will. But at this point in time, that's a particularly complex caseload that we need to transition into the scheme. If they're eligible, they need to be receiving those services, because the state government has transferred that money over to the NDIS. So there's an expectation, and we want people to have, people who are vulnerable, to have access to services. We don't want them languishing. So we're very committed to that. It's something that the department's very focused on. Our mental health branch is very focused on, our minister is very focused on, and we'll continue those discussions with the Commonwealth and the NDIA through those forums to get that cohort properly serviced. There is an issue around this. The NDIS is about permanent disability. I think some people have episodic mental health episodes that may not, which means they may not be eligible. Those complexities we need to work through, but we're certainly, we don't want to see any, we've made a commitment, the Victorian Government, that there'll be no reduction of services. So, and if, so if people are falling out of, who used to get services, disability services, we're concerned. But, you know, it's an issue. We're aware of it. We're working on it, and it's indisputable, and everyone's aware. We saw it on Q&A the other night, for instance. There was quite a discussion about it, and we're focused on it, and, you know, we want to do better, and we want the NDIA to do better, but we still have time to get it right.
Right. I think some of you know me. How long will that be? It's a long time since the NDIS and the NDIA has come together and to work out a good plan to make the people who have a disability to progress, because it's taken a long time. And I do think it's a good time, but it's taken a long time. I wonder how long further it will take you, because you've taken a long time to recognise it.
Yep. I think the issues were raised. Fair point. I think the issues are raised early. So, as you know, in Victoria, we had that kind of progressive transition through Barwon back 2013 through to where we're at now. So it had that period of time is pretty significant, and all the way through, more issues have been coming to our attention and have been raised up. In terms of how long till the solution's found across all those areas, so as I said before, we in Victoria have 1 year to go to support the transition from Victorian Government point of view until we move to what's called full scheme, and that means that the whole of Victoria will have transitioned in to the scheme. So from there's an urgency from our end to make sure this is all right. And just that so it's in all our interests to get it right. If it's not, if some of these issues about how people can enter the scheme and how long it takes for them to get in, and issues with how to claim money and all those sort of things aren't resolved, then a lot of the impact falls back onto the state system, and the state system will not be the same as it is right now. There's a lot of the areas of the state system that we're handing over to the federal government to get it right. So it's in all our interests to get that right. It has to be fixed from our end as well, for all those reasons. So, and the most important reason is so that, you know, people with a disability get what they were promised as part of the NDIS. So, you know, there'll be different parts of how long will it take. We are working really, really hard to try and get all those parts as right as we can before we are, from Victorian Government point of view, out of this disability service provision.
Hi, my name's Llewellyn Reinders. I'm from the Victorian Council of Social Service. And on a quick change of topic, I wanted to ask about school transport for children with disabilities. I'm very aware that the Department of Social Services has released a discussion paper on proposing that school transport services for children with disabilities be rolled into the NDIS. And I wondered if the Victorian Government had a view and a preferred model for the provision of school transport services.
It's going to sound a lot like a cop-out, Llewellyn, but I don't personally know, and it's certainly with Department of Education and Training. I know it's an area of that people know. I don't know whether any of my colleagues are aware of the...
We're certainly aware of that proposal. Unfortunately, not being a minister, I can't say put a preferred position before it's been discussed with the Victorian Government, but we're seeking some advice from the Victorian Disability Advisory Council, who are considering that issue next week, I think. Felix, on their views. I know You know, it's really important that people can get from place to place and get to schools with a minimum of inconvenience. So we want to obviously maintain that principle and ensure that we, if not, you know, improve the existing system, if anything. So, but I really am not in a position to offer a view of the Victorian government because it just hasn't been canvassed widely enough yet, given that's a recent, you know, a recently put out paper. But happy to take any feedback on what you think should happen.
Hello. I'm just wondering if you're aware how much advocacy has quadrupled in work. We haven't seen the likes of this before, and we've got waiting lists, and we see traumatised people every day, and I really mean traumatised, and the actual impact that's having on staff as well. When we're on the same problems, the same issues time and time again. Feels like we've gone back 20 years in terms of the adversarial nature of appealing decisions, working within that system. It was always not meant to be adversarial, but it's become very adversarial. And I just wonder if you had any thoughts about that, because we haven't had any real... numbers added to advocates to cope with this rollout.
So, there's a number of different ways. I guess I can sort of respond to that. But one is that, as Peter mentioned at the start, there's been some additional resources put into the. I should start again with saying I am not part of the NDIS, nor am I an apologist for the NDIS. The reality of that situation that has resulted in all these additional requirements for advocacy is exactly why we're also advocating and trying to influence from our level what the scheme will look like. So the impact on the advocacy sector is really, really well known through our colleagues in terms of numbers, but also, you know, the trauma which is, you know, no doubt caused as a result of that. And there's stories that we need to tell about what is happening with the scheme. In reality, the things we hear here and through the advocacy sector and in a whole range of other places are the stories that exactly the stories that we are telling, seeking to influence the way this scheme is final, in its final form, looks. Because that, you know, increased demand and all that is telling us a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, and we'd welcome being able to have some of those stories in a way that you can. Look at what's happening and have some influence because there is a lot happening all the time and we don't feel like our voices are heard. And also, you need to probably know that the NDIS doesn't really recognise advocates in the same way we're used to. Their communication with us is very limited. There's just not the same recognition that we probably had before.
Yeah.
And I'm not here to... I know you're not with the NDIS, but I know you might have some thoughts around how you could influence some of those changes.
I certainly think that through our colleagues in Office for Disability who oversee the Victorian advocacy program, we do get some of those insights. What we probably don't do as well is provide you advice on back to you on how we use that information. I think we need to do that better. Yeah, I think the Victorian commitment to advocacy has been there all along, has only grown, and that is something that the Victorian government's obviously seen the great value in. And we need to tell you how we can use the information that you provide to influence the way in which things are panning out, for sure.
Felix might have a few additional comments to make as he runs advocacy and the Office for Disability or that program, but the funding for advocacy in recent years has increased. So we've got that recurrent funding of around $3 million per annum, but we've also had additional top-ups in the consecutive budgets of around $1.5 million, getting up to sort of the $4 to $5, even to $6 in some years, I think, million mark. So the state, well, certainly $4 to $5, but certainly... the state government's absolutely committed to advocacy, recognises how critical it is at this point in time and has increased funding quite considerably in recent budgets. So really the NDIS model is about individual choice and control for individuals, which is a different model in the sense that you don't have block funding arrangements where rather than talk to individuals, they might talk to advocacy. So it is a different, you know, we're in a disruptive environment with a totally different scheme, and we have to find a place for advocacy. And the NDIA, who are a new organisation, to be fair to them, they're learning, and they're learning how to communicate with all the various constituencies, so we've got to give them time to mature. But certainly, we recognise the role of advocacy, and I'm sure they will over time, and that there'll be a seat for you at the table. Felix, do you want to add anything?
Yep. So, as Peter referred to, there has been there's the free approximately $3 million that's provided every year to 24 organisations. We have had a couple of funding rounds in recent years. So we had the Innovation Fund, where we put out to advocacy organisations seeking their ideas about initiatives that improve advocacy for all people with disability, including those navigating and accessing the NDIS. So we had the $1.5 million Advocacy Innovation Fund, and then there was the Sector Capacity Building Fund, which is about another $1.5 million, and again, seeking ideas from advocates. And in the latest budget, there's further money for advocacy over the next 2 years. So, as Peter recognises, there is a pressing need for more advocacy, including, but not only, people who will be using the NDIS. As Peter mentioned, there's a discussion paper about a plan for the future of advocacy. I strongly encourage you to provide input into that. That will be testing some ideas, including how can we respond to this increasing demand for advocacy, how can we better measure the impact of advocacy, and how can we use this next 2 years of advocacy funding and this plan to really build an evidence base for the impact of advocacy and this extra funding we are quite fortunate to receive. So watch out for the discussion paper. The office is always happy to receive people's ideas about how we can do advocacy better. You don't need to wait for that discussion paper to land to do that. You can email me, felix.neighbour, like the TV show or Next Door Neighbour, at dhhs.vic.gov.au. I'm happy to receive emails. The office is happy to receive ideas. We really welcome feedback at these forums. But the message is that, as Peter said, we're committed to advocacy. There's going to be a plan for advocacy. We want to hear your ideas about how to improve it and how to measure it. Yeah.
Hi. I've actually got several questions, I'm sorry. I was going to ask about advocacy, but there was a previous question on that. But just as a user of the system, because I have a young man, there's not enough individual advocacy. You talk about putting a lot of money into the system, but where's the individual advocacy? That doesn't seem to... And those that are there are completely overwhelmed. So basically, as an individual, it's almost pointless even ringing them up to actually get it. It's just not going... Advocacy is terrific, but it's not on an individual basis. So that's my... I don't know. I've got several questions. You want me to go through them or... Yeah. Peter, you mentioned about statistics. I'd like to know how you're actually going to collect that data when you're talking about 13.5% only being discriminated. Seriously? I'd say almost 100%. Sorry. So I'd really like to know how you're actually going to collect that data. And my other little comment for DHHS, and I know this is probably a bit... crossing over with the NDIS, but I've got a complex young man, and you know there's no services out there for our complex cohort. What role do you as the state people have in assisting to create those services with this huge packet of money I got and nothing to spend it on? So what role do you have in that? The NDIA talk about it being market-driven. I'm really sorry, NDIA, it is not working, and I really don't know if it will ever work. I think there needs to be a little bit more work done on this to create something for our guys. And, you know, you talk also about the, you know, which I asked this morning in the housing space was... the provider of last resort when you're wanting to get out of services, who's going to take that up? So your DHHS, maybe I'll put that question to you too. So there's all my questions.
Great questions. Do you want to start? Yeah. Do you want to start with you?
I might kick off. They were really good questions, and you've really cut to the chase on some of the very high-level policy discussions that are happening in Department of Health and Human Services right as we speak. So when we talk about very, very complex clients... There obviously will always be a role for state government in various sectors, for when they, particularly when they intersect with the health system or when they intersect with the justice system. The state government, under the applied principles which determine the relationship between the NDIS and the state government, the state government will have a role with very complex clients in areas like health and justice. So I don't want to in sort of breach your privacy by asking about the young man's thing, but maybe we could have a discussion offline. But we certainly, the state still has a role in disability justice. We have a very strong role in that area where we're working very hard to improve the lives of people with disability who intersect with the justice system. That will be an ongoing role for the state government post-NDIS full scheme. Also, when there are very complex health conditions, we will be involved with the NDIA. So it's not just we're just not vacating the field with complex clients. Equally, the NDIA, as they're maturing as an organisation, you know, I think they would recognise there's always complexities and challenges around more complex clients when you move just beyond, for instance, physical disability, maybe to psychosocial disability and those sorts of things. And I'm sure they're working on better targeting those cohorts and providing better services. But certainly as we roll out the scheme, the sort of 5% who are the most complex are always obviously challenging, but we're not vacating the field. We're advocating for them and we're also providing services through the state government. In terms of the stats, it was a good point. I said to Felix before, I can't believe this statistic when I looked at it. So what this does, it's a great report. It basically lists all the various measures that we have now that we know of, where we've got a measurement of a person's experience, a statistical measurement, at this point in time with disability. So rather than focus on that one that we were both a bit concerned about, another one would be, for instance, I'll just pick one randomly, proportion of people with disability who report being physically inactive with disability is 51.1%, without disability 40.3%. That's from the NHS survey. So obviously we've got a bit of work to do around getting that level back to a more comparable level so that people with disability are being physically active. But the important thing is we can all sort of question the data sources, but now there's a document that you can interrogate and you can look at and you can say whether you agree or disagree with it. And we've got a measure and a baseline. So for the first time ever, we'll be able to measure performance of our state disability plan against people's real lives. We're going to collect it through a variety of sources. So we've got NHS here, we've got SDAC, we've got HILDA, we've got all these different statistical CIS. There's not one, because it's so broad and we're so ambitious, we want to capture every element of people with disabilities' lives. We've gone to the whole spectrum of data that's out there. But I encourage you, I'll leave you, you can look at this copy, you can have my copy, and you can see, and I know we've focused on that one figure, which we're all a bit concerned about, but it's a really great document for the first time. So we're going to republish this next year, and then we'll see how it's tracking. And as those data sources populate new data from new periods, next year we'll have a new set of data, and we'll say we're going backwards, we're going forwards. I'd encourage you to look at it, and it's quite exciting.
Yeah. I actually don't understand those acronyms, to be honest, who you're actually
talking
about.
Yeah, they're various.
Me sitting at home in the suburbs, I'd like to give you some data. I could probably give you some really relevant data, honest.
Yep.
But how do I provide my data to you? I guess that's my question, sitting out there in the suburbs, the families.
Yeah. So these are all based on surveys done through health institutes or universities or the Australian Bureau of Statistics. So they're done at the sort of macro level rather than the sort of qualitative level you're talking about. But it's a measure, and that's what we want to do. We want to measure whether all the money we're providing is producing good outcomes. And if it's not producing good outcomes, should we be providing it differently, which is the advocacy paper that Felix is talking about. So we are committed to improving our services. So the statistics of complexities, there was some stuff on... There was a third question I thought you were going to do. Individual advocacy, yep.
So your point was about individual advocacy, we need more of it, yes? So individual advocacy being the one-to-one support where an advocate sits down with a person with disability or parent? Yep, so the examples of the funding I mentioned before certainly have had a focus on individual advocacy, And that could be for particular groups, for example, so Aboriginal people or people from culturally diverse backgrounds. Similarly, the most recent funding, the sector capacity building funding, will look at how to support individuals, as Peter said, in different areas, like the disability support pension, for example. I guess there's, so through the program, there's three types of advocacy that are funded. There's the individual advocacy, but importantly, there's also self-advocacy. So that's about people with disability through the program, mainly people with cognitive disability, speaking up for their own rights, which is also really important, and systemic advocacy. So through this discussion paper, we want to look at how do all those three models of advocacy work together and support each other. And there was certainly there's certainly some examples for the Innovation Fund. I think there was one for the Bowen Disability Resource Council that looked at how can we improve the self-advocacy capacity of people coming to our service so they're better able to advocate for themselves as well. So in terms of individual advocacy, we fund most of the organisations we fund are for individual advocacy through the program. The funding we've provided in the last 2 years certainly support individual advocacy for groups that are really missing out. And the discussion paper is your opportunity as people with disability advocates and family members to tell us where we need to put more effort in. But individual advocacy certainly, I think that gets the most funding at the moment, is something we'd want to continue with. Yeah. Yeah. In terms of the way to, don't ask me to quote funding figures, but the majority of advocacy organisations through the Victorian Disability Advocacy Program are funded for individual advocacy. It makes up the most amount of funding for the program. But we need, I think it's clear that we need more advocacy, and that's what the funding that we have provided is looking at, and the funding we will provide will look at as well. Yeah, okay. Answer your question? Yes and no? Yeah.
Sort of. Maybe I'll talk to you
about it. Yeah, or send me an email. Yeah. Okay.
I was just going to circle back to your first point that Peter responded to in regards to complex clients and market as well. So what Peter said around the mainstream, what they call the mainstream interface, the health, those other areas are really important. But at the same time, we're doing a fair bit of work on understanding where those gaps might be. And we've got some funding as well to try and support thickening markets, if you like, to use, you know, market language, support how we might strengthen the markets in those areas where there's going to be some of that, where there has been proven to be some of those gaps. And we have concerns still. We're still to move into some of the rural regional areas where geographic isolation will also add another factor to it. We're doing a lot of work on understanding what those gaps might be and also putting some funding forward to try and strengthen the markets in those areas from the Victorian Government perspective as well. So we're not out of that bit. Meanwhile, you know, understanding the market steward is the NDIS, but we're totally in there trying to help, strengthen those markets in those areas, and for complex clients in particular is the most critical area of all of that. Yeah.
The number of them would be sitting at home doing nothing. Yeah. Would probably stagger people. Yeah. If they really knew the numbers. We're being told no constantly because the market can't support it. Part of the problem is they don't feel like they're getting enough money to support the complex people from the NDIS. And I know there's a new price guide just starting in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
However, will that solve the problem? I'm not really quite sure.
Yeah.
Because it actually takes a lot of money to support these people. If you don't put it in, it's going to cost even more. And for our kids to fit in into an insurance model, I really scratch my head about that one as well. They're not going to cost less. They're actually going to cost more as they go through their life. And we expect, rightly so, that they live independently from us. So, I just really wanted to know what the government, like our Victorian government, really is doing in this space. Because it's very much failing us at the moment.
Yeah. That's it, I think. Thank you.
We probably have time for one more question before we close. Nothing? Okay, I just wanted to say the Victorian Disability Advocacy Futures Plan discussion paper that's coming out June. It's really a really important document that I think we all need to have input into because it's a like a once in a lifetime opportunity to be able to really say what the sector needs, because the office is listening, the government is listening. So we will have a few consultations to try and gather all your stories and all your thoughts and all your feelings about the directions. And, yes, work closely with the Office for Disability and the sector so that we can all have a direction that we're all happy with. So thank you, everyone, for coming. Thank you, Felix and Michael. And, yeah, thank you and have a good day. Safe travels home.
Thanks so much.